Welcome to the State of Innovation podcast, powered by the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition. I'm Anne Zapetsky, the newest co-host for the State of Innovation podcast and Director of Marketing and Communications for ISTC.
And I'm Austin Green, podcast co-host, as well as Research and Policy Associate for ISTC. If you love science,
space,
clean tech,
climate tech,
engineering,
life science,
biotech,
manufacturing,
fintech,
really all things innovation,
and you want to learn more about all things technology-based economic development in Illinois, then we have the podcast for you. Thank you for tuning in to our episode this month. And as always, follow our podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get to know us and our work better by visiting istcoalition.org or by emailing us. We hope you enjoy this week's episode and join us in person at our next program in an Illinois community near you. Thank you to our sponsors and members for making our work possible. And now, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone. Chicago has a rich legacy of technological and innovative contributions across various domains, from nuclear physics and economics to healthcare, finance, and startup culture. The city has been a home to many influential individuals who have made lasting impacts on their respective fields, and Chicago's history is filled with technological milestones. From the construction of the first skyscraper to the development of the first nuclear reactor, this legacy of innovation serves as a source of inspiration for the city's current generation of tech innovators, reminding them that they are a part of a long tradition of groundbreaking achievements. We have with us today one of the most prolific Chicago historians that is doing the work of plugging people into the depth and breadth of Chicago's prowess in churning out world-changing technologies and innovation. He lives by the saying, "Everything dope about America comes from Chicago." Today, he will be sharing with us about why everything dope about tech comes from Chicago. So welcome, Dilla, also known as Tinfigadilla on TikTok and Instagram, and also known as the Chicago Urban Historian. It's great to have you.
I'm really honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're excited to kick off the conversation with you. We know just what your background is in Chicago and how enthusiastic you are about making sure that everybody's plugged into the history of innovation, but also the history of Chicago in general. And so I wondered if you could just start us off with a little bit of background on your connection to tech in the city, STEM, innovation in general, and then a little bit about your mission in relation to the history of Chicago in general.
Yeah. It's crazy to think about that I've had any kind of involvement with tech, but one of the first jobs out of college was I started working for Verizon Wireless. And they were only about 5 years old at the time. And we didn't even really call them smartphones then. We had like Palm Pilots, Blackberries, and those sort of things. So one of my jobs there was working tech support. I'm always teasing people in the day of, you know, everything's right in your palm of your hand. We used to have to walk people through downloading email clients to their desktop, and then they would have to leave the desktop on at all times and connected to the internet at all times in order for it to push the messages to their devices. And, you know, somebody stepped on a power strip or there was a blip in the power over the weekend, people call us upset Monday. So just being part of that particular evolution of tech as a student, I was in seventh and eighth grade, I was in this program called Principal Scholars. And on the weekends, we would go down to UIC, you take a physics class, and they teach you how to like guess how fast the roller coaster is going based off of its shadow. You learn how to measure things based off of your shadow. So I've been, you know, very interested in tech and technology and STEM my entire life. Then as far as my background goes, I'm a son of a Chicago cop. My mom was a nurse here at University of Chicago. Just been a history nerd pretty much my whole life, public school educated. And part of my upbringing was, so, you know, I was fortunate enough to be around some historical figures due to my dad's career. And when people are historical, they talk history a lot. And so, you know, that was what gravitated to me the most.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk a little bit of history. I mean, as you are well aware, Chicago is a leader, pioneer in technology and innovation historically, just like they're a leader in innovations across multiple different areas of the culture, of economics in general. And so from the invention of the Ferris wheel, of George Ferris's wheel at the 1893 World Columbian Exposition, to the invention of the zipper, to the first wireless cell phone call in 1973, which was made from downtown Chicago. I was wondering, you mentioned the Scholars Program as one roadmap to success that we've kind of discussed in some of our previous calls, but can you share with us some of your insights on Chicago's propensity for innovation and how you believe that that has shaped the city's path over the course of history, both culturally and economically? Like, are there lessons that can be learned from those past innovations that can be implemented today?
I think so. So some of them are a byproduct of just being early to something or having nobody around to tell you that something doesn't work, right? Chicago, in our earliest stages, we were the northwest frontier of the country, right? We didn't have any land west of the Mississippi River until after the Louisiana Purchase. And so when you're off in, you know, the frontier, it's kind of like what happened with Seattle and other places, right? When you're way away, nobody's really paying attention. And then since no one's paying attention, they really can't tell you how to do something or this isn't going to work, right? You're kind of forced to do it on your own and push through. And I think Chicago benefited very mightily from that. Some of the other things that, one, just how rapid we grew. So we're the fastest growing city in modern history, right? For a very long time, we're the second largest population in this country. And so because of that, when there's a lot of people in a place all at once, one, you get a proximity of greatness. So you get all these people with all this experience in this one condensed place. And that's where innovation can come from. And then the other thing is then there's like this necessity of stuff, right? Like, you know, one of our major, most notable tech innovations is the reversal of the Chicago River. It was born out of necessity. We were drinking our own wastewater via Lake Michigan. And you know, we had a couple of cholera epidemics. Then also Chicago sits on what was formerly like swampland. And so it just didn't make for good sense to the way we were doing things. And so the reversal of the Chicago River, most engineers refer to that as like the number one engineering feat of the 19th century. So says the Army Corps of Engineers. So those, I think the necessity, I think the proximity of greatness, people willing to try things. The other part of that is when you might have left someplace one thing, always wanting to be something else. When you got to Chicago, you were able to reinvent yourself.
Absolutely. And I think part of that, of course, story is that they were the original innovators of the city, were kind of a group that was isolated from the other major economic clusters in the United States. And as you talked about, and whenever you're kind of that in that little brother mode where you have to go out and find your own way, I think that is part of the Chicago story. And also part of the Chicago story, like you said, is that proximity to greatness. I think I've listened to some of your past work and discussed, you've discussed how many local heroes, local legends, like just Chicago Cubs players, White Sox players that were able to be in the lives of so many individuals growing up in Chicago's Southwest Side neighborhoods. And that's really an important aspect to this history as well. And when we talk about that in supportive environment for innovation, when we talk about a supportive environment for really anything, that proximity to greatness, proximity to role models is really, really vital. And so can you talk to us a little bit? I know we know that the publisher of the Chicago Defender, this story is really interesting one, in that Bessie Coleman, the first woman to first Black woman pilot, her flight school education was financed by the publisher of the Chicago Defender. And there's other types of collaboration existent within the history of Chicago that we could talk about. Can you share with us some of those instances where you've seen, you know, and encountered the examples of the city investing in and supporting underrepresented and underserved populations, and especially in kind of in the STEM space, but even in general as well?
Yeah, I love that example that you use, right? We sometimes see it today, but it's mostly done through not-for-profits or something like that. Somebody got a great idea, he applies for a grant and that type of thing. But we really don't see that direct, hey, I'm going to take care of you, sort of put your arm around anymore. And you mentioned it earlier, when particularly with Black folks in the early 20th century, when you don't have access to things, when you're boxed out of certain things, when you're not allowed into the general spaces of flight school, for instance, then you kind of have to depend on your community. And as luck would have it, that previous generation of Bessie Coleman was Black World War I veterans who did quite remarkable work over in France. And so France was very welcoming. The French were very welcoming to Black folks at that time. And Robert Abbott certainly paid for Bessie Coleman to get her flight license. Not only just the first Black lady to get a pilot's license, she's the first woman to get an international pilot's license, period. Excuse me. But then you also see that in various other forms of like tech innovation. A guy by the name of Cornelius Caffey starts an airfield in Robbins, Illinois, and it's the first airfield started by Black folks in this country. And he wasn't just teaching people to fly. He was teaching like aeronautics. He thought it was very important that you knew how to fix your own airplane. He ended up like putting that type of program in Dunbar High School. It's still pretty active today. And then he goes down and he trains the Tuskegee Airmen on how to fly, right? So, you know, I would call that some major tech innovation. But to get to Tuskegee, to fund the airfield in Robbins, he certainly relied heavily on the business class in what we today call Bronzeville. And then it goes on and on with that sort of tech innovation as far as, you know, philanthropic folks figuring out that, hey, this person's on to something. There's nothing better than being on the ground floor. And so you get some of that as well.
And you mentioned Bronzeville there, and I think that's a really interesting element there. Historically, we're talking about a community that has been tied in with those history makers and history changers over the course of Chicago's history, but also writ large for the United States as well. And mentioning that connection to the Tuskegee Airmen, we know just how much that has impacted American history and how, you know, that changes the course of history. And Chicago is front and center in that history. And so you're deeply connected to many parts of the city of Chicago and deeply rooted within the neighborhoods that you grew up in, of course. But where are you seeing kind of the most progress, the most momentum for the kind of resurgence of some of these communities and making sure that they previously really vite of the really, really strong innovative spirit that has been present in Chicago? How can we make sure that that's on the forefront again? And what are some challenges that you see in trying to create that momentum?
Excuse me. Some of the challenges, I'll start with that, is awareness, right? There, in our schools, in the public school system, we're still kind of teaching from the 1950s playbook, you know, and we're not, if there is a program for coding, it's for like the smartest kids in the school and it's not accessible to everyone else on a consistent basis, right? If they're any type of programming as it relates to STEM, right? Typically, like it goes to the people who score the highest in science rather than making it accessible to everyone in the school and then trying to reach them at their level. So that's one of the challenges that Chicago is facing right now. It's, I like to call it like cream of the crop mentality. As soon as the cream rises, we knock it off the top and send them somewhere else. And what happens is when you pull all the smart kids out of the regular classes, they're unable to tutor their friends, right? Maybe the teacher can't reach the kid. The kids speak their own languages. And so the tech conscious kids can teach their fellow students. So we need to implement that, you know, citywide. But there are cool programs happening. Like there's a place in Westside called the Hatchery. And they're doing great work in making tech innovations and tech classes accessible to the residents of East Garfield and West Garfield Park. And then I think conserving and preserving history also pushes the tech innovation or potential future tech innovation because it inspires you. Like what's going on in Pullman and the resurgence of the Pullman Historic District, the Pullman Visitation Center. You can go in and you can see the innovation of a sleeper car. And then if you're from that area, you can say to yourself, well, you know, if someone else was innovative from here, I can be innovative from here too. Most of the tech stuff is happening in that downtown footprint and, you know, West Loop and South Loop. which is fine so long as it continues to radiate out, right? You know, we're seeing a lot of new tech startups come to Chicago. We're seeing major tech companies invest in Chicago, Uber and Google establishing, you know, really big headquarter office here. Meta has one here. So those are good signs.
Yeah, they are all good signs. And I know that there's a lot of effort at the state level to make sure that that type of education is kind of at the forefront, that there is, you know, more and more opportunities for coding and software development opportunities earlier on in the education pathway. And ISTC is a firm supporter of that. We have our education team that is actively trying to make sure that high schoolers and students and of all different varieties are able to get opportunities to do some design thinking within the state of Illinois. And largely, the community in Chicago, I think, is really ripe and really interested in making sure that that type of programming is available to younger folks. But what is it that you think motivates a young individual, say, from a West Side community or a South Side Chicago community to want to pursue a career within STEM? What is the type of thing you mentioned seeing somebody, a role model that is of like background to them? And we know that that type of thing is, of course, really important for self-actualization and realizing your full potential as any human can really comment to. But I was curious about if you think that that type of opportunity can really promote STEM innovation for the city writ large, and opening up pathways is, of course, a goal in that pursuit.
Yeah, we got to start way earlier than we're starting now. You know, my three-year-old can fully manipulate a cell phone, a tablet. He'll bring it to you, and instead of asking you to put the password in, he'll hold it to your face so your face will unlock it. And so that tells me that he comprehends. And maybe we need to start explaining the background of it. And we were there for a short amount of time, and then the technology shifted. I remember when MySpace was a thing, all of us were coding, whether we knew it or not. You would copy the codes from one of your friends and href and all these links and getting the song to play in the background. And it was exposing people to what actually goes on the background. And now that's like in the back, just truly no longer visible, right? You know, when Facebook was a thing, you used to be able to click and see the codes. Now you can't. So I think it's a contingent on us to introduce that to kids at a very early age, explain to them, you know, how your video game works and, you know, dumb down the technical terms to a space that where, you know, second graders, third graders can understand it. And then by the time when they're in sixth and seventh grade, then you can, you know, implement it at a larger scale. We kind of do it the other way now. We bring it to them later on in life, and they kind of already need to be interested in it in order to fully grab it. Sometimes you catch them later in the name of, hey, this is what tech pays and that kind of stuff when they get to high school, but they're still a little bit behind the curve. We should be starting way, way earlier. I was overseas not too long ago, and to like get a driver's license in Germany, you gotta, you know, speak to combustion. You gotta explain what starts the engine. You have to be able to understand all those things just to drive, right? And I think we should take on some of that here. You know, as long as you know how to parallel park and you impress the dude sitting next to you, you get a driver's license. I think if kids knew by sixth grade that we were going to be asking more in-depth questions about, you know, engines are now getting ready to be electric vehicles, right? What is a battery cell and dry cell battery? And, you know, what is amperage, right? I think if they had to explain all of that in order to start and drive an electric vehicle, they figure it out. And that would enhance tech for all of us.
It's interesting that you mentioned the German pathway model, because I think Illinois is attempting to kind of make sure that more of this hands-on approach is introduced to younger learners, younger and younger learners. And this is actually something where I think it's interesting, because there's a lot of communities of color in the United States within Illinois also that are discussing making sure that young learners are able to get hands-on opportunities within STEM at a younger age. But there's also communities in the downstate in Illinois that are in rural areas that also don't have some of these opportunities due to some of that geographic realities that are present for a lot of rural communities. And something that I'm personally attached to is some individuals that are in my life have been recently kind of recruited to teach these types of classes and coursework to a younger and younger student audience in Illinois. And one of the things that it constantly comes up is these students have a lot of knowledge of keyboarding, of technical know-how, and they're getting introduced to technology earlier and earlier. But the, like you said, the back end, the knowing how and why and component parts of each one of these models, the engineering process even, is in some ways dated. And I think Illinois is trying to catch up now, and the United States writ large is trying to catch up now. But I think it's really a commentary on the similarities that are across multiple different groups in Illinois, that we are all trying to strive for this opportunity for younger and younger learners. It's something that we can all, I think, build around. But when we talk about that geographic divide, this is a little bit more of a meta topic, I think, but there is sometimes viewed as a conflict between Chicago, the big city, and the rest of Illinois. What's going on with that? And can you talk a little bit to that geographic divide? And
they started it so long ago, right? Because the majority of the taxes and commerce, right, come from up north. And then the majority of our food and other things come from the southern, middle and southern part of Illinois. So that kind of head button has been going on for a very, very long time. Then there's also the this crappy two-party system we find ourselves living in. And so that sometimes prevents, we're always in this rush for our differences and never in a rush to just focus on what we are similar in and working our way from that. And I think that the disparities in curriculum is a thing that we all should get behind. But, you know, the one side don't want to agree with the other side. Then they're worried about everything but what they should be worried about. And that's been going on since there's been in Illinois. So we all suffer from that. There's so many points in history where the two sides wouldn't come together and the state at large suffered. And I think it's on us, right? I think one, we have to be very civically involved and, you know, whatever side of the spectrum you find yourself on, cool. But you also need to know that there's a middle, there's a gray matter, if you will, to what's going on in our state. And if you're if we did things across the state a little more equally, that would resolve things, right? It shouldn't be Chicago public schools only get tech or rural schools only get tech. Every Illinois school should have to do this, 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 and this. And, you know, we should figure it out. We can figure out so many other things. I don't think that's an impossibility. How we resolve that, I think, is each other needs to spend more time, right? There's study abroad programs. There is exchange programs on a higher level. You know, a group of third graders should have to go spend 6 weeks down in Cairo or Mount Vernon, right? And a group of students from Mount Vernon should have to come spend 6 weeks in Chicago. And I think that exchange would, one, create relationships that would foster the exchange of ideas. And then, two, I think the parents of those kids will realize that we're all facing the same things, and that'll also activate us.
Lovely. And I think that connects well to some of the work that you're doing with Chicago Mahogany. And I was wondering if you can maybe give our viewership and our listeners a little bit of a background on some of your road tours and what the goal is with that type of programming.
Yeah, we have a bus. We do neighborhood tours where we try to enhance and enrich and engage students, seniors, visitors to the history of various Chicago neighborhoods. But we do try to, like, tell the fullness of the story, right? Because the thing about Chicago is, while we are pretty segregated, the people who were in any particular landscape has shifted over time, right? There's no one part of the city, maybe sans Bridgeport, that has always been this thing, right? Everything else has gone through, you know, ups and downs and various iterations of change. So we talk about that. We highlight that. We highlight who came from those spaces, what innovations came from those spaces. We talk about the architecture of those spaces. And then we don't, it isn't solely like we're only talking about Chicago people, because sometimes people from a neighborhood have gone other places and done things in those places. And we highlight that too when we come across it. And it's really designed to instill civic pride It's designed to make us all aware that we share this city together and that rising tide raises all ships. So the better one side of the city does, the better your side of the city is going to do.
That's absolutely something that we are sympathetic and, of course, really enthusiastic about with ISTC as well. Given that we're an organization that's based out of Chicago, it's sometimes really disappointing to see the rhetoric that is present within the United States writ large about cities in general, but also it seems like Chicago is oftentimes scapegoated. And we know that this is really, really a coded type of rhetoric that is in times intended to label and lambast individuals of color and individuals in Chicago writ large as well. But there is a lot of rich history in Chicago that we even haven't even gotten a chance to dive into on this podcast. But I'd love to keep these conversations going with you. We know that there's the first controlled nuclear chain reaction was in Chicago under the leadership of Enrico Fermi at the Chicago Pile 1 part of the Manhattan Project. And I think we're really reaching that point of time in Chicago's history again, where we're starting to see that the city is on the front lines of a new age of computing with the quantum investments that have been made in the city. We're seeing a large investment in Chicago into manufacturing, advanced manufacturing. Illinois itself is really, really heavily focused in fermentation and advanced manufacturing in that lens as well. So it's really a critical juncture in Chicago's history right now. And I think we kind of can go into a conversation to kind of close us out about how history moves forward and what the march of time could look like in the city. But there's a great quote from the American poet Robert Penn Warren that says, "History cannot give us a program for the future, but it can give us a fuller understanding of ourselves and of our common humanity," which is a little bit like the conversation we were just having. But what do you think Chicago's history tells us about our future, especially when it comes to innovation, maybe even particularly within advanced manufacturing or quantum?
Well, one, it's the part, I love the way that you express that, because what we did historically in Chicago is why we're prepared for now. My day job, I got a different position now, but I was formerly an area operator, which is a high voltage switchman for ComEd, the light company here. So I'm in all the high rises, I'm underground in the vaults, I'm in the substations. And when Sam Unsell, who's a pioneering guy, he installed what most folks consider the first electric grid in the country. He invented like regulation for electricity. But most cities, right, power lines run in threes, right, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie. And they're put underground most of the time in duct packages. And so if you're going to run power line, which is three phases, you typically would bury maybe six duct packages. So in case the line blows, you can run line through a separate duct package. Well, because in the history of Chicago, they were thinking about us. They were thinking about the future. They would drop like 12, 15 duct packages. And so what that's doing now is, if you're a new tech company and you're moving to Chicago, you don't got to pay for permits to dig up the streets. You can just have your fiber run through one of the already existing duct packages that have been underground now for going on close to 100 years. And so that's what the history can tell us to think about the future, right? Don't be so caught up in what's happening right now. That's why we're seeing this burst. It's why it's so easy to start a tech company here. That's why it's so easy to start enhanced manufacturing. You're going to need power to push those robotics, and the reliability of the grid here in Chicago is because there was forward thinking. There was, we need to make sure that generations following are going to be able to enjoy the life that we have, and even better. And we need to continue to think like that. There's now it's all lens of maybe 10 years ahead, and 10 years goes by before you know it. But if we're all thinking, you know, generations ahead, then I think we'd be better. And one of those ways to do that is to enhance the STEM tech curriculum in our schools.
And doing that generation back look, I'd love to get a little cheesy question in here, maybe a cliche question, but you mentioned getting the opportunity to do the City Scholars Program. If you could go back to that class now, that class of kiddos that you were in the Scholars Program with, what would you offer them today that you think would be useful to them a generation from today?
One, I would tell them to make sure that they keep in mind that they need to create a space in the future so that someone behind them can be in those type of programs. I would tell them to really probably dream bigger than, you know, even whatever that thought was during that time. You should probably 10X it. I also would do my best to get them to engage with like the older generation, right? So I know for me, I didn't always come home and try to walk my parents through what I learned. And I think that that's a helpful thing too, because then there's a cycle of learning going on, which will become contagious.
I love that. The contagious circular learning process is one that I think a lot of people can relate to from multiple different backgrounds, but it is so vital in order to encourage that learning moving forward. And Dilla, I appreciate you taking all the time that you have today to sit down on the podcast. Do you have any pluggables for us? Any time of upcoming road tours for the Chicago Mahogany?
You can go to our website, chicagomahogany.com, and you can look at the schedule of tours that we take. We pick up downtown. We don't do downtown tours, but we pretty much tour all sides of the city. You can go on my social media, the number 6, FIGGA_DILLA, and look at some of the history content that I produce. We also very honored and proud to go do speaking engagements with various schools and organizations. We travel, so if you want to reach out to me, I'm certainly down to come talk the importance of history. Nothing really to plug. I'm just going to keep working because I'm very invested in the space. And like I said, I know I'm not going to be here forever, so I want to make sure I'm doing my part to chronicle the history of this great place so that others behind me will have access to it.
Well, Dilla, we're so appreciative of you for taking the time. Thank you for all the work that you're doing in Chicago. Thank you for what you're doing in Illinois writ large as well. And really, listeners, if you get the opportunity, check out Six Figure Dilla on TikTok, Instagram, and other socials as well. We'd love for you to get a chance to engage with his content, and just like you're engaging with ours. So, Dilla, thanks so much, and we'll definitely see you all next time on the pod.
All right, peace, bro. Thank you.
Appreciate it.